Peter felt a violent urge to punch him in the face. He needed some outlet for his rage. He felt belittled, soiled, and used. She was clever enough to realize that the sex was not enough of a hold to force you to commit murder. So she took your daughter. And immediately had her mutilated. Just as at Johannesburg, she had executed hostages without hesitation. The world must learn to fear Caliph. There was no smile on Parker's face now. I truly believe that if you had not been able to deliver my head by the deadline, she would not have hesitated to carry out the next mutilation, and the one after that. Again, Peter was assailed by a wave of nausea, as he remembered that shriveled white lump of flesh with a scarlet fingernail floating horribly in its tiny bottle. "We were saved from that by the most incredible piece of luck," the Provo informer said Parker. And again, the understandable eagerness of the Russians to cooperate with us. It is a wonderful opportunity for them to hand us their problem. They have let us have an almost full account of the lady and her history.
"But what are we going to do about it?" Colin Noble asked. "Our hands are tied. Do we just have to wait for the next atrocity? Do we have to hope we will get another lucky break when Caliph kills the next Arab prince or machine guns the Shah's sister?"
"That will happen, unless they push through the OPEC decision," Parker predicted levelly. "The lady has converted very easily to the capitalist system now that she owns half of Europe's industry. A reduction in the oil price would benefit her probably more than any other individual on Earth. And at the same time, it will also benefit the great bulk of humanity. How nicely that squares all her political and personal interests."
"But if she gets away with it," Colin insisted, "what will be her next act of God?"
"Nobody can predict that," Parker murmured. And they both turned their heads to look at Peter Stride. He seemed to have aged 20 years. The lines at the corners of his mouth were cut in deeply like the erosion of weathered granite. Only his eyes were blue and alive, and fierce as those of a bird of prey. "I want you to believe what I'm going to say now, Peter. I have not told you all this to put pressure on you," Parker assured him quietly. "I have told you only what I believe is necessary for you to know, to protect yourself if you should elect to return to the lion's den. I am not ordering you to do so. The risks involved cannot be overestimated. With a lesser man, I would term it suicidal. However, now that you are forewarned, I believe you are the one man who could take Caliph on our own ground. Please do not misunderstand what I mean by that. I am not for a moment suggesting assassination. In fact, I expressly forbid you to even think in that direction. I would not allow it. And if you acted independently, I would do my utmost to see that you were brought to justice. No. All I ask is that you keep close to Caliph and try to outguess her. Try to expose her so we can lawfully act to take her out of action. I want you to put out of your mind the emotional issues. Those hostages at Johannesburg, your own daughter. Try to forget them, Peter. Remember, we are neither judge nor executioner." Parker went on speaking quietly and insistently, and Peter watched his lips with narrowed eyes, hardly listening to the words, trying to think clearly and see his course ahead. But his thoughts were a children's carousel, going round and round with fuss and fury, but returning with every revolution to the one central conclusion. There was only one way to stop Caliph. The thought of attempting to bring someone like Baroness Magda Altman to justice in a French court was laughable. Peter tried to force himself to believe that vengeance had no part in his decisions, but he had lived too long with himself to be able to pull off such a deceit. Yes, vengeance was part of it, and he trembled with the rage of remembrance, but it was not all of it. He had executed the German girl Ingrid and Gilly O'Shaughnessy, and had not regretted the decision to do so. If it was necessary for them to die, then surely Caliph deserved to die 1,000 times more. And there is only one person who can do it, he realized.
Her voice was quick and light and warm,
with just that fascinating trace of accent. He remembered it so well, but had forgotten the effect it could have upon him. His heart pounded as though he had run a long way. "Oh, Peter, it's so good to hear your voice. I've been so worried. Did you get my cable?"
"No, which cable?"
"When I heard that you had freed Melissa Jane, I sent you a cable from Rome."
"I didn't get it, but it doesn't matter."
"I sent it to you via Namco in Brussels.
It's probably waiting for me there. I haven't been in touch."
"How is she, Peter?"
"She's fine now." He found it strangely difficult to use her name or any form of endearment. He hoped that the strain would not sound in his voice. "But we went through a hell of a time."
"I know. I understand. I felt so helpless. I tried so hard. That's why I was out of contact. Peter chérie. But day after day, there was no news."
"It's all over now," Peter said gruffly.
"I don't think so," she said swiftly.
"Where are you calling from?"
"London."
"When will you come back?"
"I telephoned Brussels an hour ago. Namco wants me back urgently. I'm taking a flight this afternoon."
"Peter, I have to see you. I've been too long without you, but, oh, mon Dieu, I have to be in Vienna tonight. Wait, let me see. If I sent the Lear to fetch you now, we could meet even for an hour. You could take the late flight from Orly to Brussels, and I could go on to Vienna with the Lear. Please, Peter. I missed you so. We could have an hour together."
One of the airport sub-managers met Peter as he disembarked from the Lear and led him to one of the VIP lounges above the main concourse. Magda Altman came swiftly to meet him as he stepped into the lounge, and he had forgotten how her presence could fill a room with light. She wore a tailored jacket over a matching skirt, severe gunmetal grey and tremendously effective. She moved like a dancer on long, graceful legs, which seemed to articulate from the narrow waist, and Peter felt awkward and heavy-footed, for the awareness that he was in the presence of evil sat heavily upon him, weighting him down.
"Oh, Peter, what have they done to you?"
she asked, with quick concern flaring in those huge, compassionate eyes. She reached up to touch his cheek. The strain and horror of the last days had drawn him out to the edge of physical endurance. His skin had a greyish, sickly tone, against which the dark new beard, darkening his jaws, contrasted strongly. There were more fine silver threads at his temples, gull's wings against the thicker, darker waves of his hair, and his eyes were haunted. They had sunk deeply into their sockets.
"Oh, darling, darling,"
she whispered, low enough so that the others in the room couldn't hear her, and she reached up with her mouth for his. Peter had carefully schooled himself for this meeting. He knew how important it was that he should not in any way betray the knowledge he had. Magda must never guess that he had found her out. That would be deadly dangerous. He must act completely naturally. It was absolutely vital, for there was just that instant's remembrance of his daughter's pale, wasted, fever-racked features. And then he stooped and took Magda's mouth. He forced his mouth to soften, as hers was soft and warm and moist, tasting of ripe woman and crushed petals. He made his body welcoming as hers was melting and trusting against his, and he thought he had succeeded completely, until she broke from his embrace and leaned back, keeping those slim, strong hips still pressed against his. She studied his face again, a swift probing, questioning gaze, and he saw it change deep in her eyes, the flame going out of them, leaving only a cold, merciless green light, like the beautiful spark in the depths of a great emerald. She had seen something. No, there had been nothing to see. She had sensed something in him, the new awareness. Of course, she would have been searching for it. She needed only the barest confirmation. The quirk of expression on his mouth, the new wariness in his eyes, the slight stiffness and reserve in his body, all of which he thought he had been able to control perfectly. "Oh, I am glad you are wearing blue now." She touched the lapel of his casual cashmere jacket. "It does suit you so well, my dear." He had ordered the jacket with her in mind, that was true. But now there was something brittle in her manner.
It was though she had withdrawn her true self, bringing down an invisible barrier between them. Come. She turned away, leading him to the deep leather couch below the picture windows. Some airport official had been able to find flowers, yellow tulips, the first blooms of spring, and there was a bar and coffee machine. She sat beside him on the couch, but not touching him, and with a nod dismissed her secretary. He moved across the room to join the two bodyguards, her grey wolves, and the three of them remained out of earshot, murmuring quietly amongst themselves. "Tell me, please, Peter." She was still watching him, but the cold green light in her eyes had been extinguished. She was friendly and concerned, listening with complete attention as he went step by step over every detail of Melissa Jane's kidnapping. It was an old rule of his to tell the complete truth when it would serve. And it served now, for Magda would know every detail. He told her of Caliph's demand for Kingston Parker's life and his own response. "I would have done it," he told her frankly, and she hugged her own arms and shuddered once briefly. God, such evil can corrupt even the strongest and the best. And now there was understanding softening her lips. Peter went on to tell her of the lucky tip-off and the recovery of Melissa Jane. He went into details of the manner in which she had been abused, of her terror and the psychological damage she had suffered, and he watched Magda's eyes carefully. He saw something there, emphasized by the tiny frown that framed them. He knew that he could not expect feelings of guilt. Caliph would be far beyond such mundane emotion. But there was something there, not just stagey compassion. "I had to stay with her. I think she needed those few days with me," he explained. "Yes, I'm glad you did that, Peter." She nodded and glanced at her wristwatch. "Oh, we have so little time left," she lamented. "Let's have a glass of champagne. We have a little to celebrate. At least Melissa Jane is alive, and she is young and resilient enough to recover completely." Peter eased the cork, and when it popped, he poured creaming pale yellow Dom Perignon into the flutes and smiled at her over the glass as they saluted each other. "It's so good to see you, Peter." She was truly a superb actress. She said it with such innocent spontaneity that he felt a surge of admiration for her, despite himself. He crushed it down and thought that he could kill her now and here. He didn't really need a weapon. He could use his hands if he had to. But the cobra parabellum was in the soft chamois leather holster under his left armpit. He could kill her, and the two bodyguards across the room would gun him down instantly. He might take one of them, but the other one would get him. They were top men. He'd picked them himself. They would get him. "I'm sorry we will not be together for very long," he countered, still smiling at her. "Oh, chérie, I know, so am I." She touched his forearm, the first touch since the greeting embrace. "I wish it were different. There are so many things that we have to do, you and I, and we must forgive each other for them." Perhaps the words were meant to have a special significance. There was a momentary flash of the warm green fire in her eyes, and something else. Perhaps a deep and unfathomable regret. Then she sipped the wine and lowered the long curled lashes across her eyes, shielding them from his scrutiny. "I hope we will never have anything terrible to forgive." For the first time, he faced the act of killing her. Before, it had been something clinical and academic, and he had avoided considering the deed itself. But now he imagined the impact of an explosive Velex bullet into that smooth, sweet flesh. His guts lurched, and for the first time he doubted if he were capable of it. "Oh, Peter, I hope so. More than anything in life, I hope that." She lifted her lashes for a moment, and her eyes seemed to cling to his for an instant, pleading for something. Forgiveness, perhaps. If he did not use the gun, then how would he do it? He wondered. Could he stand the feeling of cartilage and bone snapping and crackling under his fingers? Could he hold the blade of a knife into her flat, hard belly and feel her fight it like a marlin fights the gleaming, curved hook of the gaff?